Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. The ideas that chain us to the guillotine are preposterous, nonsensical ideas. Breaking those chains is easy once you free your mind. This program, Disillusioned Part 3, is the third in a series illustrating the deadly illusions that threaten the existence of white people. Like the beliefs prevalent in the Dark Ages that a flat earth was the center of the universe and that evil spirits cause disease, these false ideas cause us to fundamentally misunderstand the world around us, make us blind to the real potentials of our situation, and make real solutions and real progress impossible. Let's take some time and sweep the cobwebs from our minds. Number 5 on the deadly illusions list is the concept that using our scientific knowledge to improve ourselves genetically is somehow evil. Far from being evil, eugenics is actually the most beneficial and humane discipline ever devised by the mind of man. In fact, eugenics is the only viable long-term solution to all our social problems. As I said on this program in 1993, eugenics is the only way to a better world. Science has shown us that genetic structure is by far the greatest determinant of intelligence, character, and behavior. Unfortunately, those with the best genetic inheritance tend to have the fewest children, and those with the lowest intelligence, lowest potential, and worst character tend to have the most children. This leads to a genetic deterioration of the race that gets worse with each passing generation. No amount of education, no laws, and no increase in the power of the police or of the state can counter this degeneration. Eugenics is simply the idea that we should humanely use our social policies to encourage as much as possible the birth of children with good genetic qualities, and to discourage as much as possible the birth of children with poor genetic qualities. Some of this could be done with the more advanced techniques of modern reproductive science, such as allowing surrogate mothers to carry the highest quality children in large numbers, or encouraging the voluntary use of egg banks and sperm banks to propagate the best children that our race can possibly produce. But most eugenics would be simple and basic and just good common sense. Instead of taxpayers subsidizing the birth of ever more 70 IQ underclass gangbangers through welfare payments to crack whore mothers and the like, the welfare system and the tax system should be reorganized to discourage in every possible way the birth of future Crips and Bloods. This could be done by linking the perennial underclass's benefits and mitigation of criminal sentencing to sterilization or emigration. And there could be endless variations on the theme of tax deductions, tax credits, interest-free loans, and outright gifts extended to families of good genetic inheritance to encourage them to give the priceless gift of their children, most of whom will grow up into highly evolved creative problem solvers to our society. How can that be evil? It's not evil. It's really the ultimate good. After a few generations of eugenics, after a few generations of 10 times the number of problem solvers and culture creators being born, and a tenth of the number of problem makers and culture destroyers being born, we would have a very different world indeed, an infinitely better world. The fourth item on this list of toxic illusions is the idea that democracy is a synonym for freedom, or is even compatible with it. This is really an insane idea, and I have even run across it among those calling themselves white nationalists. A democracy is a society in which the majority rules by voting, and the power of the majority or their representatives is essentially unlimited. I ask, how in the hell is that compatible with freedom, much less synonymous with it? How are you free if at any time the majority can silence you, take your property, imprison you, enslave you by dictating your actions and associations, or even kill you? Just as we need to be protected from individuals who are bandits and murderers, we also need to be protected from groups who would steal from us or harm us. And there is no more dangerous group than the manipulated, fickle mob given the powers of force and of life and of death. And that is exactly what a democratic government is, a mob with force to back it up. That is precisely why America's founders did not make America a democracy. In fact, if you read the debates that brought the Constitution and the Bill of Rights into being, you will learn that preventing democracy, preventing mob rule, was one of the founders' main concerns. That's why more than half of the Constitution consists of enumerating a very short list of things that the government can do, and a much longer list of then thought to be ironclad statements detailing numerous things government can never do, the will of the majority notwithstanding. Consider the right to keep and bear arms, an absolutely necessary right for any free people. If only the police can have guns, then you are living in a police state. End of story. Our Bill of Rights says that no legislature, no majority, no democracy, no consensus, no matter how strong, can ever disarm us. The form of government given us by the founders allowed us to vote for representatives to perform the limited functions of government, true. But it also, for a time, protected us from democracy. The Constitution also specified that our nation was for white people and the future generations making up our posterity. It says that no legislature, no majority, no democracy, no consensus, no matter how strong, can ever make America a multiracial nation. But Americans lost interest in their history and their unique legacy of freedom. They let demagogues tell them they lived in a democracy. They allowed us to stagger toward mindless mob rule, doubly dangerous in an era of alien-controlled mass media. They allowed the fundamental principles of our nation to be violated and then abandoned. The results we see today in our ever-diminishing freedoms, our foreign wars, and in the culture of lies which props up the oligarchs who rule the multiracial feeding and breeding zone that used to be America. Learn this lesson, and learn it well. Democracy is not a synonym for freedom. Democracy and freedom are, in fact, mutually exclusive. Number three on the list of illusions that threaten to wreck our children's future is the idea that Jews have suffered in unique and unprecedented ways, different in severity and moral quality than the sufferings of other peoples. If you took them at their word, always a foolish and dangerous thing to do, you'd believe that 6 million of the darlings were killed during World War II. Never mind that they've been caught in whopper after whopper in telling this particular atrocity tale. Never mind that the world's richest ethnic group adds to its swollen coffers by milking the taxpayers for billions every year based on these stories, while other groups that suffered more get nothing or even have to pay. And never mind the unjust and shameful persecution of David Irving and Ernst Zundel and many others for rationally questioning these Jewish tales. It's a very strange sort of truth indeed that requires draconian laws to criminalize those who question it. In fact, historically speaking, every so-called truth which required the imprisonment of those who doubt it has turned out to be a damned lie. But never mind all that, except the 6 million figure for World War II Jewish losses. How does it compare with the losses of other peoples? More than 40 million white people died during World War II. More than 9 million white people died just a few years earlier in World War I, and that's probably a low figure, since figures for civilian losses were not systematically kept during that war. And that's also ignoring the many hundreds of thousands, perhaps as many as a million Armenians who died under the rule of the Ottoman Empire at that time. Between the world wars, many millions of white people died under largely Jewish-run communism, including more than 5 million in Ukraine alone. After World War II, historian James Bach has shown us that some 9 million Germans died due to deliberate government policies, almost all of them helpless civilians or prisoners of war, a genocide that for some mysterious reason has not resulted in required courses in public schools, feature films, or a History Channel miniseries. Our school children can parrot back the canned figures for Jewish losses in World War II, but haven't the faintest idea of the losses suffered by white nations. Not Russia, not Germany, not France, not Britain, and not even America. This exaltation of Jews as the ultimate victim makes us sitting ducks for economic exploitation, a kind of slavery, really, based on these atrocity tales. And it also provides the Jewish supremacists a powerful psychological weapon with which to batter those who point out Jewish genocidal activities in the Middle East, where Jews brazenly kill and take other people's land, and in the West, where Jews use their power to push population replacement of whites by imported Third Worlders. Number two on the list of illusions that are killing us is the idea that the Jews are God's chosen people. This nonsense was sadly inherent in the ancient writings on which the religion the West inherited from the dying Roman Empire was based. Western Christianity had largely repudiated it over the centuries, and it played little or no part in the doctrines of major sects for hundreds of years. But it was always there in the accepted canon of holy books, ticking away like a time bomb. The time bomb was finally set off by the rise of the fundamentalists, ironically the same sects with which the white right chose to ally itself during most of the 20th century. These deluded folks, with the help of Jewish money and Jewish television, have made themselves the most powerful prop upholding the neocons. Their bloody wars in the Middle East and their transformation of the conservative movement in the United States from one of racial realism and integrity to one of aggressive support for multiracialism, open borders, and the worship of Jews as virtual gods on earth. Those who wish to see the world as it really is, and not through the lens of a false but emotionally loaded morality implanted in childhood by abusers of a holy trust, should objectively consider the following. If you want to enslave an alien people without firing a shot, what better way to do that than by convincing them to accept a religion in which your own people are especially holy, chosen, and connected to God, and in which the bedrock of all morality for every nation is to be found in how well they treat and how much they reverence your holy chosen nation. Then consider who wrote the works which make the chosen people claim an authorship which is not in dispute. Then consider how very different our social policies and foreign policies would be if it were not for the political power of those who believe in this self-serving, purpose-written, and crazy myth. The number one illusion that is killing us is that the races are in some sense equal, and it is of no consequence if one race replaces another. This is the key to everything. This is the falsehood that is pushed most vociferously by the Jewish supremacists in all the media they control. It is a philosophy of surrender and death. So naturally, it is promoted by those who want us to give up all that we have and who want us to die without any resistance. It is especially forced on whites. No one objects if Japan and China have policies favoring Asians or ensuring that their nations remain Asian. No network news anchors express outrage if Zaire or Kenya remain black nations with black-controlled governments. And the controlled media beam benignly when Israel openly announces policies designed to preserve the Jewish character of the explicitly race-based state of Israel. How many times have you heard our politicians express our determination that whatever the cost in American money or American lives, Israel has a right to exist as a Jewish state? But let a German say that he doesn't think Germany should become Turkish, or let a Frenchman say that the millions of non-white Muslims now there should leave France, or let a Briton say that Britain should be British, not Pakistani, or let an American say that importing Mexicans is a bad idea, and the media and political establishments immediately go on the attack. A white person who wants his nation to remain white is placed outside the pale of acceptable political debate. He is attacked as an exemplar of total evil. He is punished in any way possible, economically, personally, and quasi-legally, and in some cases is given special attention from the secret police and charged with crimes he did not commit. But pushing the idea that the races are equal and that the replacement of our children by third worlders is of no consequence is unquestionably genocide. Survival of the genetic patterns of one's group, one's people, one's extended racial family is, so far as science and philosophy have been able to show us, the categorical imperative of all life on Earth. If we abandon the struggle to ensure that our progeny will inherit the land we have developed and the civilization we have created, then we have given up on life itself. We are nothing more than walking corpses. And there is no crime greater than denying life to the infinite white generations that can exist in the future. By doing that, we would be denying life to future and greater Shakespeare's and Aristotle's, future and greater Edison's and Tesla's and Marconi's, future and greater Jefferson's and Columbus's and Curie's and Pierce's. The race that first spread its wings and touched the surface of another world would die and never rise again to the great discoveries and great powers that it could achieve. Discoveries and powers that we cannot even imagine now. There is no greater crime than this. This killing of the future. Today I have shown you that the quasi-religious and absurdly false concepts that have been implanted and carefully cultivated in us are worse than the most worthless dross and are in reality deadly poison in the form of destructive thought patterns. The pious man's belief that Jehovah will give him an extra pat on the head in heaven for every non-white soul he saves, or every bullet he buys for the IDF, is just as deadly as the LSD taker's idea that the onrushing locomotive is made of marshmallows. Does our rejection of these deadly illusions, does our rejection of much of the dogma of what today passes for religion, does our stance as logical, rational, eyes-wide-open people mean that life has no great transcendent meaning? Does it mean that we see everything as governed by mere chance? Does it mean that we can never say the words creator, or eternity, or destiny, or God? No. It means instead that we give those words their highest meaning, their true meaning, or at least as true as our current level of intelligence, understanding, and wisdom will allow. This is one of the reasons I chose the choral setting of Finlandia by Jan Sibelius as the theme music which closes every American Dissident Voices program. With a few breaks, we've used it since 1991, when this program began. The part we use is the final section of the piece, and the lyrics are by the American poet, Amy Bridgman. Writer Sam Dixon has commented on the meaning of this piece in his introduction to its performance at the memorial service for Revelo P. Oliver. Quote, "This stirring composition, which concludes the longer piece of the same name, expresses with majesty and solemnity the joy of the Finnish people at their liberation. The beautiful English translation expresses the hopes and longings of all branches of our race facing contemporary ruin and extinction through diversity, multiculturalism, integration of the races, and a new world order." Close quote. The piece not only symbolizes a people's longing for freedom and self-determination, precisely our goals for European-descended peoples everywhere, but it also symbolizes a striving for racial progress, for higher and more godlike levels of consciousness, and it does so quite beautifully. Since the words may not be perfectly clear in the musical recording, particularly at lower bandwidth, I'll read them to you here. "On great lone hills, where tempests brood and gather, primeval earth against primeval sky, we, faring forth, possessed by fervent longing, have found a throne eternal and high, have knelt at last in wordless adoration, till fire and whirlwind have both gone by. With ardent song we greet the golden morning, by faith upborne, remember not the night. The whole wide world triumphant hails the dawning, God walks abroad in garments of might. The hills, behold, are now a path of splendor, transfigured all, and all crowned with light." It is with that vision in mind that I beseech each and every one of you who hears my voice to abandon the illusions that chain you to the guillotine and accept the truths that will accompany you on a stairway to the stars. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strong reminding you to do right and fear no one.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout.